Welcome to episode 107 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Many of you will remember the drama with the Japanese green woodpecker from episode 93 of this podcast. Today we return to the same park as autumn sets in here in Tokyo and the weather cools and the autumn flowers grace us with their yearly presence. As I've mentioned before, the summers around Tokyo can be quite oppressive, and even when you do venture out, the greenery is often drab and sort of tired looking, and flowers pretty much die off after the spring flourish until autumn anyway. Now autumn is well and truly here, and I'm looking forward to the trees starting to burst into colour, which will probably happen in the mountains in the nearby prefectures within the next week or so, a few weeks late because of the hot September that we had. In the parks, though, many of the flowers are now in bloom, and on Saturday, the 7th of October 2007, I went back to the Jindai Botanical Park with my eyes open for some favourites. Today we're going to look at 7 of 17 images that I just uploaded to my online gallery from that day. I have to admit that this was kind of a throwaway visit to the park today, and with, you know, me and my better half having been stuck indoors for most of the last few months, I opted to go back to Jindai, the park that we visited on this day, against my own best judgment. I wanted to go to a different park because I knew what they had there, but with Jindai, you know, it has a few areas which are quite heavily wooded and therefore a nicer park for an afternoon walk. I figured that I would have to, I'd better just, you know, let the other half have a nice afternoon in the park after all of the months being cooped up. And so I was ready to sort of put photography to the back burner if the flowers that I wanted to shoot weren't there. I was pleasantly surprised, though, as the afternoon progressed, as we'll see later. First, though, I wanted to take a look at a few of the shots from the Rose Garden, which Jindai is actually more famous for. Let's first look at image number 1551, which is the centre of an incredibly red rose. Here I've concentrated on capturing the amazingly vivid red of this rose with as accurate exposure as possible, and focused on the stamen and the bits and bobs in the centre of the flower there. Without doubt, the theme for this particular image is the colour red. It just screams out to us, but as we've mentioned before, it can be difficult to capture this kind of vibrant, highly saturated red without blowing out the red channel. The trick here is to use the RGB histogram if your camera has it, and meter for the highlights. We've been into this before as well. But really, you know, be careful not to allow the red channel to actually touch the right shoulder of the histogram, meaning that it would be overexposed. And that's even if the, you know, the other colours, the green and the blue, are way down on the left side. You know, the red here is the one that's really going to get the attention. So, you know, if you use a histogram that just shows you black and white, then it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But if you can split it up into the RGB colours, just keep your eye on that red and make sure that it doesn't touch the right shoulder. You can quickly kill all of the details in the reds by going over without even really realising. I was shooting in manual mode, so I can't tell you how much exposure compensation you'd need to apply or things like that, but really, just keeping your eye on the histogram is the key to capturing this colour correctly. It was a really bright day, as you can probably tell from the image, so I was shooting with ISO 100 at 1/500th of a second with an aperture of f4. You can tell that the colour is perfectly exposed because of the detail in the visible parts of the petals there that are in focus. By visible, I mean in focus. You know, if it's not in the image, it's not visible. But, you know, some areas are not in focus, and they're going to sort of smooth out into a block of colour. because they're outside of the depth of field. But where you can see that it's in the depth of field, it's you know, it's you can see detail in the reds, and that allows us to see that, you know, we've got it nicely exposed. Getting the main parts in the center of the flower sharp help to sort of keep the shot sane with this sea of color. And on this occasion, I've included a part of the edges of the flowers to give us a reference on the size of the flower head itself. Now, I'm not a classic style rose fan, as we can see from this last image, but as I was thinking this day may be a throwaway photographically, I was making the most of the walk around the rose garden and shot a few other images here too, with just one more that I wanted to look at before we move on, which is number 1556. Here, once again, I've found the situation that I've mentioned before that I'm keeping my eyes out for. And basically, this is a shaded main subject with a bright background. And, you know, that I've found that this makes for some very nice bokeh, which is the out-of-focus area of an image. I found these very pale pink roses in the shade of the trees at the edge of the rose garden, but in the background was the rest of the garden, which was fully lit by the bright sun and so made a nice backdrop with some splashes of colour and, you know, basically adding interest. I shot this at f2.8, again for 1/500th of a second shutter speed, and still at ISO 100. The wider aperture allowed the background to go way out of focus, and I positioned the foreground flowers in the middle of the frame there, so, you know, so that it creates some crazy sort of patterns in the bokeh. If you are listening and need to catch up on the photos later, you won't really be able to appreciate this, but there's lots of stuff going on in the blurred areas there. There is plenty of sharp focus too, as the stem of the and the leaves of the main subject to the left are all visible, and a few leaves on the right side. So it keeps us busy looking through the various dimensions of this essentially two-dimensional image. It's the ability to separate things out like this with the wide aperture that really add depth to the image, which is what I'm really looking for and I really like shooting. I shot an F4 version of this too, but to be honest, there was just too much detail in the bokeh for my liking. There are a few other images from the rose garden online, including a pretty wacky shot of a bee in a yellow flower, which really looks as though I've overexposed the yellow that is just fully lit. But again, I was watching the histogram, and this is actually not blown out. I'm not going to go into details on that, though. But it is sort of a very extreme, nice, vivid, and somewhat wacky image. I'll put a link into the show notes to display all of the shots from the day if you want to check these out later. But let's move on to some other shots. After the rose garden, which we'd just left about 1 p.m, we'd had a really sort of steady stroll around and you know, walked through the woody area, sat on benches and just chatted and sort of, you know, sat around relaxing in the mottled shade of the trees on this nice warm afternoon. Shortly before 4 p.m, about 3 hours later, and, you know, a few walks, a few sits down later, we came to an area with some dried up dead heads on the plants, and there were a number of dragonflies flying around, seemingly enjoying the warm afternoon as much as we were. There were a few large dried up sunflowers in the middle of a patch of soil, which I'd shot with a dragonfly perched on the top, there were three flower heads, and I'd shot it on the top of the top one. But it really didn't work out for me as much as I'd liked, so I haven't uploaded it. I might have a play around with it later, see if I can rescue something, because it does have potential, but right now I've not uploaded that. As I was shooting here, though, I turned around and saw another dragonfly on a dried up plant, which is what we can see in image number 1558. I was employing a tip that I've given you before in this podcast, basically shooting from far away and slowly getting closer, because I didn't know when this guy was going to have enough of me and fly away. By the way, all of the images that we're looking at today, all of the images uploaded actually, were all shot handheld. I had my tripod with me, of course, but really didn't need to set it up with all of the available light, although I had raised the ISO to 200 for this shot, which, by the way, was it was shot at f4 for a 200th of a second. Talking about light, though, it was actually about 90 minutes from sundown at this point, so along with the colours in the scene, the light is starting to warm up now towards the end of the day. This helps to add to that nice warm autumnal feel that the image has. I find that really quite pleasing. And note that I have, of course, focused on the eyes, as we always do, but that has also, from this angle, allowed part of the framework of the wings to come into focus on the dragonfly. And, I think this works relatively well. At this point, I was thinking, well, I've got a few nice shots of the roses and now probably have a nice dragonfly shot, so maybe today was not a throwaway after all. But, of course, I'd enjoyed a lot of lazing around and chatting with the missus, and we really, had a nice day with the focus, although slightly on, but mostly off photography. It seems, though, that at the times when you really don't expect or hope for anything more, the situation can sort of change and just you'll be presented with something that, you really weren't expecting. And this is exactly what happened a few minutes after shooting the dragonfly. Let's look at image number 1559, in which we can see the scene I'd pretty much stumbled across. I said earlier that there were some flowers that I'd been hoping to shoot, and one of those types of flowers is the cosmos flowers that we can see here. This is just a small patch of flowers, maybe 25 feet by 15 feet, or what would that be, about 8 by 5 meters, but it was enough to make some great images that I'm really pleased with. The other amazing thing here is that, as we can see, the low sunlight was shining through, well, we can't see the gap in the trees, but we can see that the sunlight is relatively low, and it was shining through a small gap in the trees, just basically lighting up a part of this patch of flowers, which was, actually right, the area is right near where I shot the woodpecker shots that we looked at a few months ago. This was really magic light, though, and only lasted about 10 minutes, maybe less. So I was really lucky to stumble across this patch right at this time, totally unplanned and totally welcome. So let's talk about the image itself. We can see that I've gone down sort of low and included a patch of darkness, which is the shade of the trees behind the flower patch. The sun is hitting the cosmos flowers themselves sort of head on from behind. It's backlighting them, which really sort of brings out the detail. And it just adds so much sort of great contrast, yet the frail flowers are perfectly lit by that warm light. This is really effective, and I really couldn't have wished for better conditions. The flowers themselves as well they're just at the right level of blooming, the right state. There were very few dead heads or wilted flowers. The mix of pinks, whites, purples are all very effective as well. Had this been a field of all the same colour flowers, it might not have been quite this effective. I dropped the ISO back to 100 here as there was plenty of light, and I was shooting with the 20 to 200 millimeter f2.8 with the 1.4 times extender or teleconverter attached at this point. Shooting with that combination, I was right out extended to 280 millimeters, and I was able to just select and sort of pick out a number of small patches of flowers and just shoot away making images. Let's move on to image number 1562, in which we can see another patch of flowers. Here I've removed the 1.4 times extender and shooting it at 200 millimeters with the aperture wide open at f2.8 for 1/400th of a second. I've included some flowers in the foreground for what I call foreground bokeh, And that's a trick that I often employ to add a soft, dreamy look to my images. To be honest, looking at this image after the event, I'm wondering if there's also a little bit of ghosting maybe there caused by the sun hitting the front element of the lens. I was not aware of this at the time, and I don't think that the sun was quite that low in the sky, but the effect does look a little bit like a spot of ghosting. And if that's what it is, though, to be honest, I'm not worried about it at all. It's just adding to this sort of dreamy feel that I do like. So, I'd probably even happier if that was what it was. It's an extra trick that we can use. But to be honest, I don't know, and it's not intentional if it is ghosting. And really, what this all does, you know, whether it's ghosting and or an image, a flower that I did place in the foreground, it's really sort of just adding to the depth of, you know, of the shot. I really feel like we're able to sort of walk in and sort of move through the image. There's definitely a lot of depth in there. And what it is, you know, over to the right side there especially, you know, we have this myriad of flowers. And, you know, you can see them sort of coming through in various degrees of softness. Some that are quite sharply focused, but not sort of quite, you know, they're still soft. And it's enough to give us interest. But then, you know, as we start to move back or forward from that point, we can see the ones that are out of focus as well. And it just really sort of drags me into the image. On the left third, we can see the largest flower head of the shot on which I'd obviously focused. But this is accompanied by four taller stems. Two of them have flowers on, and two with flower buds, which really, though, all as a whole, they all really help to balance out the image. There's just so much going on in this image that, I really, really like it. You can probably tell from my enthusiasm. And yet, you know, it still retains that dreamy sort of late afternoon feel, and I'm basically, you know, very happy with it. In the next image, number 1564, we can see a whole new look. Here I selected a patch that was almost totally in the shade now, with just a splash of light hitting the main subject, a flower in the top third intersection. This time we really have a pastel colour effect across the background with that really well-balanced pink, white and purple mix of flowers again. The light is also catching the stalks of the main subject with a few around it and adding contrast to the right side and again a little more interest. The tall flower on the left side is slightly out of focus, but noticed how I've made that purple flower there to the far left sort of neatly in the image along with the taller flower to its right, which again adds balance to the shot. Of course, as I'm now shooting the shaded flowers, I had adjusted the exposure as necessary, still shooting with the 70 to 200 millimeter f/2.8. I selected an aperture of f/4 and a shutter speed of 1/100th of a second, and still at ISO 100. With all of the verticals in the image, I figured that it would be nice to try a vertical aspect as well, which is what I did for the last image that we're going to look at, which is number 1565. In this shot, we see more of the partially lit flower and its stems to the right. And I've just about got that purple flower that I mentioned a moment ago to the left in as well, but the taller flower to its right here is almost mirroring the main subject on the opposite side, again maintaining balance of the image. Because of the vertical aspect now, though, we see more of the background as well, sort of sweeping through. There's lots more patches of colour to the very top of the image. Again, this has the same pastel-like colours, because the majority of the scene is now in shade. I also noticed that I've adjusted the exposure again, changing the aperture to f3.2 and the shutter speed to 1/160th of a second at ISO. You can tell here that even though I'm shooting in manual mode, once again, yeah, as once you have the scene metered and you've checked the histogram to make sure that nothing's clipping and things are exactly how you want it to be, it's easy to make small modifications by counting the clicks either side of the same settings. So for the last image, I was shooting at f4 for 1/100th of a second, if you remember. So I'd basically just open the aperture up by two clicks two clicks of the dial there to 3.2, and move the shutter speed by two clicks the other way, making it faster to 1/160th of a second, basically just ensuring that the same amount of light hit the sensor as the previous shot. I mention this just to sort of really reinforce how easy it is to shoot in manual mode. Many people do shy away from manual, but really, once you get used to it, it can be your friend. I probably use it more often than necessary because I'm so used to it, but in difficult lighting situations, it really does save a lot of trouble. In the first two pictures of these Cosmos plants that we looked at, they had a very dark background. There is no doubt that the camera would have metered for the overall darkness of the scene and tried to brighten it up and totally blown out the flowers, rendering the shot useless, if you hadn't checked and compensated as necessary. And we can, of course, use exposure compensation, but then as we point the camera down and include more flowers in the foreground, the meter would run out again, and we'd have to reduce the amount of compensation. All really just sort of unnecessary if you just switch to manual mode and get used to it. I know once I've set once I know that I'm the main subject here is the flowers, right? Once I know that I've got those exposed correctly, I can include one in the frame with a total black background, or I can fill the frame with flowers, and it's not going to make a difference. The exposure's where I've set it, and nothing's going to change, and they're all going to be perfectly exposed. This really allows me to just concentrate on shooting, not exposure, once the initial settings and the histogram checking is done. This is, of course, until conditions change, like when I switch to the from the backlit flowers in the first two shots to these pastel sort of coloured flowers in the second two. And, you have to repeat the process, but it's really very fast once you get used to it. I would also have to do a similar amount, probably a little bit more work, if I was using aperture priority and exposure compensation anyway. So I'm just really still confident to suggest that if you're not used to using manual mode, if it still scares you — it used to scare the hell out of me — really do consider giving it a try. And, once you've used it, you'll definitely, you'll learn that it can be your friend, and it'll definitely help you, even though it's a little bit scary at first. Anyway, bumping into this incredible light with the flowers just at the right stage in their blooming, even though I'd almost sort of given up on the day, really was a bit of luck. As we've said before, being prepared and being observant is always going to be necessary. Without finding the subject and having the right gear to capture it at any particular time, no amount of luck's going to help. But still, I felt privileged to have stumbled across this patch of flowers at such a great time of the day and of the year. So basically, all of the conditions came together, and that, with a big dollop of luck, led me to end up with another few great images for my portfolio. So that's about it for today. I hope you enjoyed joining me in the Jindai Park again. I just wanted to quickly mention the Hokkaido workshop next year again before we finish. For those of you that are new or haven't listened to the respective episodes, I'm going to be running a photography podcast in Hokkaido next January, and I'm currently looking for people interested in joining us. It's going to be the trip of a lifetime, not only because of what you'll learn, but also because of the location. We'll spend almost 5 days traveling around the northeast side of Hokkaido in the peak of winter, so it will be just a total winter wonderland. We'll see the majestic red-crowned cranes, stellar eagles, white-tailed eagles, Ezo deer, and possibly some of the some other wildlife, as well as taking in some landscape work in this beautiful winter location. For full details and to book your place, go to www.mbp.mbpworkshops. Let me say that again, www.mbpworkshops.com. And also listen to episode 103 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, in which I went into full details. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the peak. Some people have already signed up, so obviously you guys. But I'm looking forward to seeing anyone else that's interested in January as well, in my favourite place on earth, which is Hokkaido. Also, a quick mention that the documentary photojournalism assignment is now closed for entries, and voting is turned on until the end of Sunday, October the 14th, just about anywhere in the world. At that point, I'll create next week's podcast and announce the winners and also announce the theme for the next assignment, so stay tuned for that. Please do go over to www.mbpgalleries.com to vote as well, if you haven't already. There are some great images in the assignment gallery, which you can find just about halfway down the page. And also, you know, I have one quick reminder for the member galleries website, where, you know, basically, it, apart from the assignments, the main sort of thing over there is where listeners and members sort of share your own images and critique each other's work. It seems that you know, some people have not managed to see the note in the middle of the page about having to create your own album when you're uploading your new images. And what's happening is a number of people have been sort of sticking them all in the Critique Me album, which really should be only used for images that you want feedback on. So I'm not singling out any one person. I've not even really looked who's doing this, and I'm not bothered. I just wanted everyone to note that, you know, you do need to create your own album, and, you know, there are some notes on how to do that. I've also added a few notes around the site when you're uploading images as well. But basically, you know, take a look, find out how to create your own album, and upload your general images to there, and save the Critique Me album for ones that you really want people to spend time on. I know that it's the site is really not very intuitive in some places as well. So as I say, I'm not bothered about this. And it, you know, sorry if you feel bad that I'm mentioning this, but if you are doing that, please figure it all out. And that's it, really. I guess the only thing that remains to be said is have a great week, whatever you do, and I'll speak to you again next week. Bye-bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the potosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.